The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
770-KMED.
Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Take it away, Devin. How are you this morning, Devin? You're on the road. What's going on?
Good. How you doing?
Doing well. What do you think?
Well, you're talking about things getting heated down here in Dusty County with fire maps and homeless problems.
Yeah.
Then I seen something floating around about them wanting to put meters on residential wells. Wondering how much traction that's going to have.
Yeah, I ended up, I've been getting in touch here with Kevin Gill from Clouser Drilling. And he says that it appears that they have been able to kill the bill or kill the parts that, once again, they talked about the metering of the well for now. But as long as the state legislature is in session, that doesn't really mean anything. You know what I'm saying? So it appears that the metering of the well has been killed for now. Okay?
Okay. Just goes to show you, you know, they're just trying to price us out of this damn state, you know? It's one thing after another.
Yeah, it is. And you can't go to sleep on any of this stuff because there's another intrusion coming every day, no matter which direction you look at. From Salem and, frankly, FedGov, too. Hopefully the FedGov thing will get a little bit better. Good hearing from you, Devin. 770-5633, Deplorable Patrick is here to opine. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks so much for what you do. And
my pleasure.
Yesterday, there was a talk about sending $40 billion down to L.A. to take care of those people with burned-down houses. And, you know, frankly, I could use $40 billion myself.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to do? Vote for idiot liberals that won't take care of the water reservoirs and defund the fire department? Would that? Could I get something going?
Well, by the way, that that fire chief was fired finally. Yeah,
hey, I just want to make a serious comment about this though. If you got $1 million house down in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
I would venture to say that probably half of those people that got burned out have other wealth as well. Don't let them sit there and say, oh, thanks for rebuilding my house. They've probably got stocks and other properties and stuff like that. They can't just all just stand there with their hand out and have their houses put back because we like them.
You know, I want to be fair, you know, about this, Patrick, and I think the unspoken part or the saying the quiet part out loud is what they're talking about is not L.A. the way it currently is. They want to kind of make it more like that climate-friendly, equitable community sort of Bullstein that Kate Brown, of course, envisions for downtown Medford and downtown Grants Pass and downtown Ashland and everything else. I'm not convinced that it's actually helping a whole bunch of wealthy people rebuild their homes. I don't think that's all about it. They don't want that. They don't want that coming back. They really don't. They seem to be almost at war with this concept of people having their private homes, at least from some of the planning that I've talked about. Remember, they seem to be wanting to make that technocracy of Los Angeles, which I consider very dangerous, really.
Well, I like your insights. I hadn't thought of that angle of it. I just, you know, these people, to me, they got it pretty good. And
yeah. And by the way, $1 million house in Los Angeles is a crap shack. You understand that, right?
Yeah. I was trying to be brief about it. I don't want to go into a lot of detail.
All right.
But,
hey, but yeah, we'll think about it. The thing is, though, $40 billion, and I know we probably got a billion or two down here for Almeda, maybe more. I don't know. I don't know what the total of the Grand Stream funding was. But even then, look at how much of a focus there was on not building back what was there, because what was there was just bad. You know, it had people owning homes, and they had affordable homes. They were, you know, older manufactured housing and things like that. We don't want that. We want the shiny new climate-friendly, equitable community kind of model. Right?
Well, I'm starting to get way past tired of people saying, we don't want this, we don't want that. I think we, the taxpayers, need to talk about what we want.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you, Patrick. Let me go to the next line here on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. on KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Thank you. It's me, Gregory, out in Shady Cove.
Hey, Gregory, nice seeing you the other day. Did you enjoy the outdoor show?
Those are great. I've got a topic about the radios that you have. Those are nice office radios. That radio they have in the office. I got a head injury. So that's a nice radio that you have in the office there. And then I'm going to talk about, do they have any 3D modular or the home, the 3D? They're not doing the 3D builds here that are completely fireproof out here. And
okay, what are the 3D? I'm not familiar with what you're speaking about.
Well, they take, they just bring out a machine out there.
And the 3D printing, the 3D printed homes, right?
Yeah. You had a person on there recently, well, within the last year, that was talking about that once. And then I'm going to go real quick about the Sportsman Show. That was pretty nice there. I'm just wondering if anybody really knows about if they're going to throw the fish in the pond, those trophy fish they had out there, the whatever.
Into the expo pond? I can't answer that one. Yeah. I'll ask Greg about it, though, right?
Yeah. So if you get that other guy about the home, you know, all the fireproof and stuff. But,
thank you, Gregory.
The Glace thing, the Glace resort. That's another topic.
All right. Another time. Thank you very much, Patrick. 9 minutes after eight here. A different Patrick writes me. Pac-Man says, Bill, if they build it, they will come. I would argue that a visit to Josephine County is that you can visit Crater Lake and, oh, wait, that's a different one. Pardon me. If they build it, they will come. Yeah, no. They would have misunderstood the phrase. If they build it, it will slum. Well, I hope not. That's the whole idea. You know, I am going to invite the airport director to come on, though. And I know this proposed 190, what was it, roughly, I think, give or take, a $200 million airport expansion. I have no problem with this because it ends up being paid for out of ticket fees and things like that. But you've noticed an explosion of hotels that have grown up here in Southern Oregon. And we do seem to be pushed all the time to think that the way to wealth and prosperity is that we're going to have a lot of tourism and hotel jobs. Not that I'm against tourism and hotel jobs, but it would be, you know, is this all there is? I just get concerned that it is, it is discretionary money. This is the challenge I have with the focus on tourism. It's discretionary money. It's stupid money. And, you know, once you get past, maybe we'll get wealthy having cornhole tournaments. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this and I'm short-sighted. Maybe I'm wrong. It's going to be cornhole and basketball tournaments, and we're going to get wealthy here. Maybe there's enough stupid money, you know, that wants to do that kind of stuff. I hope I'm wrong if that's the case. Maybe I'm the wrong guy here.
This is Insurance Agent A.
Hey.
He sells for one company only.
18 after 8, we continue the conversation on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, 770-5633. This is a time for you to share your thoughts. Positive, otherwise. It doesn't have to be a pebble. It could be maybe a little pearl of wisdom, if you wanted to. Pearl of wisdom, not really all that apparent in this story I was just reading this morning on OPB. OPB reporting that Oregon school districts say lawmakers screwed up light bulb bill. I know you're shocked and appalled that the Oregon State Legislature could actually screw up something, right? But here's the deal. Charles Krupa writes this morning, Oregon lawmakers concerned about climate change, they had reason to feel good in 2023 when they passed what appears to be a common sense bill, mandating that buildings swap out fluorescent lights. Swapping out fluorescent lights for highly efficient, mercury-free LED bulbs. Now, by the way, I have lots of LED bulbs right in my life. But this is what the school districts is saying. The school districts are saying something very different about LED bulbs. You see, no one asked the school districts what they thought about the bill. And now a bunch of these school districts are coming to the state legislature with not very good stories. In Lebanon and Sheridan school districts, the district people complaining about LED bulbs that flicker and burn out quickly, distracting from learning because they are ill-suited to work in the existing light fixtures. They buzz, they hum, and they produce less than optimal light, according to Sean Vesper, the operations and facilities manager for the 700 students at Sheridan School District, telling OPB, it affects these kids in ways that I can't explain. And swapping outdated fixtures for better options can be prohibitively expensive, school officials say. In the Salem-Keizer School District, the state's second largest, Superintendent Andrea Castaneda told lawmakers it would cost $42 million for the cash-strapped district to pull from its general fund to retrofit schools to use LED bulbs. So what they're asking then is the ability to be allowed to purchase fluorescent bulbs until at least the year 2030. That's what they're asking for right now, or else they're asking for more money to replace this. Now, if you're watching on Facebook Live, if you're watching me on Facebook Live, you're the people that are there, you're working or you're watching me under LED bulbs. In fact, I have LED bulbs that were replaced in the existing fixture. People came in and they did this a number of years ago. I have three or four LED light bulbs that are behind me that are on a dimmer, and they work just great, and they've been working great for years. I think what it comes right down to it is what they're concerned about. And this is just going to be me spitballing it. If you work within the facilities of Medford or Grants Pass School or anybody else, I think what's going on here is that all these school districts have been buying the LED fluorescent tubes or the LED replacements for fluorescent tubes that are designed to just go up in the regular fixture and work with the existing ballasts. We have two of those bulbs here at the radio station. I had to take them out because they suck. They just don't work. They'll only work with the existing ballasts if they're electronic ballasts, and the ones that they have there are most likely the old transformer style. That won't work. And so those bulbs, yes, indeed, do buzz, and they hum, and they flicker, and then they burn out, and they just don't work. All right? They're not very good. But the fluorescent tubes that are above me right now, you know, that I have put in for Facebook Live, those are just designed to be connected directly to 110. And I think where I don't know if it's because the people in the school districts don't want to get creative about this, but you have to have some people come in, whether it's electricians or whatever it is, and just bypass the ballasts, and you just have to reconnect the 110 volts, the 110 volts, to the two terminals on each end, and then all of these things work great, and it works wonderfully. But I guess what they're saying is that, hey, we can't do something like that. We can't modify the existing structure. We have to have brand new fixtures. So, yeah, the law in the first place was stupid, telling the school districts to not use them, okay? All right, that you can't buy these things. But it's also stupid to act as if they are helpless to be able to use and go get LED. In fact, you just go down to Home Depot and get LED bulbs and replace them at probably about 10, 11, 12 bucks a piece. But you have to rewire. You got to get your people that are running your buildings. You have to get them to just bypass the ballast and make it work. So the school districts are just looking for a handout. They would just like new lights. And the state of Oregon, of course, is stupid by telling them that there's something wrong with the fluorescent bulbs in the first place. Of course, I don't know. I can't afford to have the fluorescent bulbs around here anymore because you see how much they charge over at the landfill to get those things recycled? Oh, you got yourself a fluorescent light bulb, huh? Well, you know, we are an East Coast garbage company, and so we got to find a way to screw you. Curly fry bulb, that's got to be at least $15. Mercury in it, don't you know? Oh, the tube, that's probably maybe 20 bucks. I actually think it's about $5 a tube or whatever it is, but it's absolutely outrageous. Maybe that's what the school district is really concerned about. You're having us have to recycle all of these mercury-filled fluorescent light bulbs, and it'll bankrupt the budget. I don't know, but if you have any experience at that, they're just using the wrong LED bulbs, in my opinion, okay? So there's a pebble in my shoe. What about you? Hi, good morning. Who's this? This is Bill.
Bill, it's your friend Brad here. Hey, do I have your permission to talk a little more about Dave Frohnmayer?
Sure. Yeah, I know you were visiting yesterday. We had him on. Sure.
Well, yeah, so Dave Frohnmayer, one of the highest horsepower individuals ever born on the West Coast, probably in the top five of highest horsepower ever to come out of Medford, and a huge cautionary tale for all of us in modern-day Oregon in this way. So, Rhodes Scholar became Oregon Attorney General.
Yeah.
He was the guy that took on the Rajneeshis that bought the old John Wayne Big Money Ranch up in Antelope, tried to take...
You know, a lot of people forgot about that part of his history. I think they forgot about that one.
Well, this Rajneeshi guy was big news. I mean, he's the guy that had like 20 Rolls Royces. They bought the old Big Money Ranch. It made national news. And his people, they literally, on the day that everybody was voting, they tried to poison the food sources to suppress the voter turnout so that they could get their people. They were literally going to take over county government. His lieutenant was a gal named Ma Anand Sheila. She wound up, I mean, you can read this story on YouTube somewhere, but Dave Frohnmayer was the guy that took all that big, tall, good-looking kid, smart as hell, and he was a shoe-in for governor in the 1990 election. I mean, he crushed it in the primary, and running against a Democrat, Barbara Roberts, kind of a short little gal that
I remember Barbara. Now, weren't there rumors about that election having been manipulated?
And that's what we're going to talk about, because it has relevance today. So he crushed it. He crushed it in the primary. He was on the way to just absolutely decimate the left, and so the Democrats had to come up with outside the box thinking. So here's what they did. With dark money donors, they literally came up with a brand new party called the Oregon Citizens Alliance, and they recruited a single plank candidate named Al Mobley. He only had one plank in his platform, and it was that he was pro-choice. Now, you might ask yourself, you know, back in 1990, how big of a deal was pro-choice?
That was a big deal.
And the answer is, it was big enough to get Barbara Roberts elected in this way. And a lot of people don't know that it was the Democrats that financed Al Mobley.
In other words, they ended up financing a third-party candidate that was going to siphon away Republican votes.
That's exactly right.
Hmm.
So Barbara Roberts wound up getting 508,000 votes. Dave Frohnmayer got 445. Al Mobley got 144.
There you go.
If the people that voted for Al Mobley would have easily. And so that's why we're sitting here today in 2025. And the last Republican governor ever elected was back in 1982.
Well, all I can say here is that if we want another Republican, it's time to finance big time. Instead of contributing to Republican coffers, we should be sending money to the Pacific Green Party. What do you say? Because look at that. About the only statewide Republican one, or at least that was competitive, was the one that had a Pacific Green Party in there, siphoning off a lot of commie votes from the stronger commies. Okay?
So the benefit we've got an opportunity coming up in the next election, because a lot of this funny money we've discovered is these various sources of dark money are now being discovered because of the work of Doge,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to have near as much access to funding as they did in the last election cycle. So not only that, but we have candidates that are much weaker. Tina Kotek wasn't all that popular when she ran in the first place.
She's not even that popular within her own party. She's not. Agreed.
That's correct. So what we have is that, and I'm not talking about Republican, Democrat, Bill. You know, when it comes to this stuff, is what we're talking about is business-friendly community builders, people that want to make lives better for their fellow Oregonians. That's what we're talking about. And there's an opportunity coming up in this next election cycle, and it's just so important for people. You know, I understand if you're pro-life, conservative, Christian, Republican, that's great, but look to the big picture and realize we have an opportunity coming up. We don't want to do what happened back in 1990 when we could have had a wonderful governor in Dave Frohnmayer, but because of that outside third-party run that was funded by Democrats, we wound up having nothing but progressives for the next, what is it, 40 years?
Yeah.
40, 45 years,
here,
something like that.
You know, your challenge here, and I know that, and I know where you're going on this, this has been the battle, the internal battle within the Republican Party of Oregon, is that not every Republican is a pro-life, right-to-life Republican. Is that kind of what you're
correct.
Alluding to? And yet,
that ends up
being, though, the litmus test for most Republicans, especially in the primary races. And so what wins you in the primary races, unfortunately, I wish it weren't true, but unfortunately will tend to get you killed in a statewide election. Seriously.
And most of the electorate, Bill, as you know, isn't Democrat or Republican. The majority of the electorate in Oregon are people in the middle. They're non-affiliated voters. They just want safe communities for their kids to live in.
All right. Unless they're unborn. The unborn kids, they don't necessarily care if they're safety. You know, this is the state of Oregon. It is kind of a semi-official death cult.
Yeah. Dave Frohnmayer would have been such a wonderful. I mean, it's just a shame. He would have been an outstanding governor, that guy. He was so smart.
Thanks for sharing the stories and your opinion about that. I forgot about the Rajneeshee stuff, and you're absolutely right.
Oh,
going a long ways back then. What a difference it would have made. Thanks, Brad. 8:32 at KMED.
Wipeout hunger is over. Thank you to everyone who participated in our Wipeout Hunger campaign at Kelly's Automotive Service. We're so grateful for your generosity, and we hope that you're seeing better with your new wiper blades. But now we want to
honoring the outstanding talent, innovation, and dedication that make our region shine. The Best of Southern Oregon 2025 is proudly presented by Dusty's Transmissions and by Coastal Media. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
I will get back to your calls in just a few minutes here, so just hold that, or if you're on hold, just go ahead and hold, and we'll get to you for sure, all right? It's time for a quick open for business. We talk with locally owned and operated businesses, and not just the businesses, but get to know some of the people and why you need to get together with them. And we have, once again, folks here from Network in Action. Lisa McLeese Kelly, of course. We know you're strong from Kelly's Automotive. We've been talking to you for years about this. But we're introducing more of the listeners here and business people to Network in Action.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about for those that may have never heard of it now.
Right.
What's it all about, huh?
So Network in Action is something completely different from maybe your typical networking. We get together only once a month. We have business owners and higher level executives, and we are coming together to mastermind, network, and grow deep relationships. I like to say that I coach them. I help them learn in professionally, personally, and then how to grow their business.
And it ends up ringing the cash register too, which is also, I mean, not only doing good, but doing well, I guess, is
yeah. Well, it's hard to get referrals from people unless they know who you are as a person.
Yeah.
Right. So I know that you're in radio. I know that a lot of people around here are on radio, but I advertise at this radio station because I know Brian. I know his heart. I know he's not going to try and sell me something that I don't need. I know who he is, and I know his values.
And you know how much pressure you've just put on Brian? I'm just kidding. No,
and,
Brian
and that's
is that
what
way.
We try to establish in NIA, is we try to get them to know each other as people.
Yeah. And the other aspect of this is that when it comes to the certain business classes that you have, is that there's only one in each one of these Network in Action. What do you call them? Hubs or?
I would call them groups.
Groups,
and it's
okay.
One person per professional classification.
All right. And how do you get in touch to get Network in Action to join this maybe for your
right.
business?
So right now, I think the best way to get in is to find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
It's Lisa McLeese Kelly on LinkedIn. I'm the only one there. Find me. Message me.
Yeah, it's great to have that. Yeah, it's not exactly a common name, is it?
No, it's
all
not.
Right. Okay. Hey, I wanted to talk with a couple of you. Are these relatively new people joining the group here?
No, these are some pretty seasoned vets here.
Oh, okay. So they were going to put them under the... Yeah, seriously. Let's talk with Ellie George first. Now, Ellie, you are with HomeQuest Realty. Very well know about you, elliegeorge.com. And first off, what has Network in Action done for you? How has it worked out for you so far?
Oh, I've been with Network in Action since I think the beginning.
Yes.
And it's a big change than other networking groups. I've always
How
been.
How so?
The other ones, in my opinion, sometimes attracted newbies. And sometimes I didn't really have the confidence to always refer to people because of their experience level. In Network in Action, the majority of the people that are attracted to that are seasoned in their different businesses, mm-hmm. and they know what they're doing. We meet once a month. Quite frankly, I'm too busy to meet every single week, especially at 6 a.m. Not going to happen for me.
Yeah, I know that there are other networkers that kind of do that. I'm just like, yeah. Boy, at 6 a.m., I'm here.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, exactly. We're in the thick of it. And so Network in Action, not only that, we really learn, and being a business owner can sometimes be a lonely place to be. So this is where you can network with other business owners and learn how to conduct business, how to support employees, how to do all that
stuff. And have those relationships and mutually reinforce one another here.
Yeah, it naturally follows because people do get to know, like, and trust you.
Hey, well, yeah, I like doing business with people who I know.
Yeah.
Know and trust and feel pretty good about it. So speaking of the business and, real estate, how's that looking here in Southern Oregon? You know, I'll get the news releases that are saying that, more homes for sale or less homes for sale. It's kind of like unemployment rate kind of goes up and down. You know, I never know how to quite interpret that. How's it looking right now?
Well, right now we are pretty flat for appreciation levels over last year and the year before. I would say we're up in some price points, down in other price points. I think overall we're expected to be 2-3% appreciation. And historically, that's a healthy place to be.
Yeah,
we're back to normal.
I think people got used to the fact, like, now, all I have to do is just sit in this house and it gains 10% a year. It's like, no, someone has to be able to pay for that on the other side,
right?
Yeah, and I guess this is so. Chances are, we're looking at probably less appreciation over the next few years until, especially because even interest rates right now, 6% right now?
So we're between 6 and 7, whether you're a conventional or FHA.
That's not
six
even
six and a half to seven.
That is not a high interest rate.
Historically.
Historically. I mean, I paid that. I was happy to get that in the late 90s, early 2000s, those sort of things. But I think we kind of got spoiled there in super cheap money time.
Yeah. We got really spoiled.
Yeah.
And so that's not coming back anytime soon.
So bit by bit, though, as the natural appreciation and inflation tends to go in there, affordability will tend to just naturally increase, I think, over time.
Yeah. And, there's things that we can do. We have buy down rates. Some people will do a 2-1 buy down. And man, if we get that Doge money, and I'm calling it a rebate, by the way, a Doge rebate. I would love to get that.
Who wouldn't?
Give me free money.
Give me my money back.
Yeah. It's a rebate. I say, hey, go use that for a buy down on your interest rate on your next house.
There you go. A few points, a point here or there, right?
There you go.
That kind of thing. Biggest misconception of our market. What would you say that is here in Southern Oregon?
A lot of people got used to just putting their house on the market and knowing, hey, it's going to sell. Right now, if you have things that need to be done to make it show worthy, you need to do it.
You better fix it then.
Yeah.
Right.
They're selling for less. Fixer-uppers are selling for less. And homes that are really, turnkey ready, they are selling for more now.
I would also figure that how do you look at fixer-uppers there? The cost of labor has soared so much that to bring someone to, do this kind of stuff would...
And materials.
Would make people think, I don't know if I want to do the fixer, right?
Yeah, that's
unless
right.
maybe they're their own contractor. All right. Hey, good talking with you. Best way to have people get in touch with you?
541-601-9582 or elliegeorge.com.
All right. Very good. So Ellie's going to step aside here, and our next victim here is Mel Ford. Now, you're going to have fun with this one, right, Mel? Okay. Now, Mel is operating and sales manager at Rogue Solutions Accounting, and it's on 303 Northeast Street, Northeast E Street, rather, Suite 200C in Grants Pass. And I'll put all your information up on this one, too. So what do you do as far in your firm? Naturally, you're doing books and things, but what makes you different?
Well, we do books. We do bookkeeping and accounting, but we also do... we don't do taxes. Mm-hmm. So that's one misconception that people have.
But you do the books so well that you're not in tax trouble, I think is the main issue,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
Making
so
sure
we prepare
nice and clean.
The way for your CPA is what I like to say.
Yeah. And what sets you apart then, let's say, from other firms?
So we help our business owners really understand their financials. A lot of business owners are overwhelmed by financial reports, understandably.
Yeah.
So we like to break it down for them and make it simple and easy to understand.
It's one of those things where you bring a human part of it. I've been kind of concerned sometimes in which I'm trying to think, what are some of these financial packages that they sell out there? It's like, oh, you individual businesses, you can do this. You don't need anybody to look at this. We'll walk you through the software.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't tell you how many business people I've known that have gotten themselves in trouble doing stuff
like
that.
Yes, and then you spend thousands of dollars in a cleanup because of that, or, you know, not getting your taxes done correctly and having to fix your taxes. That's a big headache.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Very good. What kind of changes do you see in the accounting world these days? I mean, do you sit around there kind of panicking if the tax cut bill does go away and then there's a complete different way of looking at how you would structure businesses accounting for taxes? I don't know.
Potentially. But I think the biggest thing is that business owners are always going to need an advisor person in their life to help them with making those financial decisions. And so what we do really is always going to be relevant. AI will replace some of the function of what we do, or at least it'll integrate into what we do.
I think AI replaces the bad ones.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. You can't replace a truly good accountant, with AI completely, sure.
A good accountant, as far as I'm concerned, worth weight in gold, really, when it comes down to protecting the integrity of your books and also good paper trail. And is there anything else I'm missing here about this? Because I've just been a working schmo myself. I've never had the opportunity to use one.
Well, I'd say it's for business owners. I think it's a lifeline that everyone needs. Mm-hmm. I think it's often overlooked, and I think in the beginning of your business, it's easy to overlook and bypass. But when you get to a certain point of revenue, I think it's essential to have on your team.
Network in action. How has it helped you? What have you enjoyed in this?
Very similar to what Ellie said. I think it's a higher level of connection, a deeper level of connection with those referrals. The people in that group have been instrumental in getting us referrals, as well as helping us to really find the business owners that need us and that we like to work with.
All right.
So both.
And really good personal relationships.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they help me personally and professionally.
All right. Very good. So, hey, Mel, I appreciate you coming in here. We'll get all your information up. Maybe a quick one. Best way for people to get in touch with you?
Rogueaccountant.com.
All right.
My website.
Now, see, that's easy.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear that term, rogue accountant.
Yes.
Yeah. She hoists the black flag and is going after your books.
Are.
Okay.
Yep, yeah. That's us.
There we go. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Lisa, thank you for bringing these people by here. It's
Absolutely.
Great to get more people to recognize Network in Action. One more time to get the latest on Network in Action. How do they get a hold of you?
Go to LinkedIn and look up Lisa McLeese Kelly.
Right.
It's McLease.
We'll catch you next time.
Thanks.
Lisa McLeese Kelly, and of course, Ellie and Mel, thanks for coming in this morning on Open for Business. It is 11 before 9, KMED.
The popularity of Fontana Roofing's
my theme. I'm looking here and, oh, there it is. We're just going to hit this live here. Diner 62 Real American Quiz. I mentioned in the promo we were going to do this today, and I kind of forgot about it. Then Brian says, oh, here's your quiz. It's like, all right. Well, I've got this. We have a $20 gift certificate for you right now, and all I need you to do is call 770-563-3770-KMED, and I ask that you have not won this over the last 60 days, and we'll get you taken care of. By the way, Diner 62 delivered to me last week. Last week, they delivered, in fact, it was on, was it Thursday or Friday? I forget. But it was a Diner 62 burger. Now, it was the Diner 62 burger that has the hamburger patty, and of course, naturally, you got all the fixings and all the good stuff, but also a layer of ham on this, too. So it's like a ham and a hamburger, which was just awesome good. Awesome good. And on top of that, they included not regular fries, which are also stellar, but it was onion rings. Oh my gosh. And there were so many onion rings, I had to share them with Scuba Steve. I didn't want to share them with Scuba Steve, but I didn't want them wasted. You know, Scuba's laughing. He's next door in the studio with me. But anyway, let's see if we can get you set up here. And we're talking about some history. Let's see. Let me go to the phones. Let me see who's there. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. It's Jerry.
Jerry, you'd like to win the Diner 62 quiz, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Get yourselves those burgers or half ham special, all the other things they do there. All right.
Yes.
So it was February 25th, 1779, British surrender Fort Sackville. I've never even heard of Fort Sackville, have you?
I have not.
All right. But Fort Sackville is surrendered, marking the beginning of the end of British domination in America's western frontier. Now, 18 days earlier, George Rogers Clark left on the Mississippi River with about 170 guys, including Kentucky militia and French volunteers. The party traveled over 200 miles of land covered by deep and icy floodwater until they got to Fort Sackville in Indiana. It was February 23rd, 1779. Now, inside Fort Sackville, Hamilton had only 40 British soldiers and an equal number of mixed French volunteers. French settlers fought on both sides. And there was also militia from Detroit. Now, what was a major contributing factor that helped the British surrender? It convinced them to surrender and give up. What was it? Was it A, the U.S. contingent looked larger than it was? B, food was dwindling and being rationed? C, a U.S. envoy warned the reinforcements were intercepted? D, the U.S. set the fort on fire. Boy, that's a big one. Or was it E, French volunteers inside the fort threatened to mutiny? It's one of those five. What compelled the British to surrender? Only one of them is true, okay?
Well, I really like the fifth one, but I think the food was dwindling.
The food was dwindling. That's a good one. No Diner 62 to supply the fort, right?
That's right.
I'm sorry. It wasn't this time. Good try, though. So we're going to skip this one. So it is not the food. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike. What compelled the British to surrender Sackville? Was it a U.S. contingent looked larger than it was? An envoy warned that reinforcements were intercepted? D, the U.S. set the fort on fire? Or E, French volunteers inside the fort threatened to mutiny? We were going to mutiny. Which one was it?
How about A, the... Looked like there was more of them.
It looked like there was more. You think that the Brits were fooled by such a simple trick, right?
Yes.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
While there were several contributing factors, the biggest was that Clark managed to make his 170 men look like 500 because he had them hold and wave a bunch of flags suitable to a larger number of troops. And so the woodsmen that were filling Clark's ranks were able to fire at a rapid rate that reinforced Hamilton's sense that, boy, there are a lot more people out there than we think. And meanwhile, Clark began tunneling under the fort with the intent of blowing up the gunpowder stores within it. And also when a Native American raiding party tried to return to the fort from the Ohio Valley, Clark's men killed or captured all of them, too. So needless to say, you're right. They faked him out. And I love stories like that, don't you? Those are just great. I love that kind of stuff.
Yes.
All right. Hang on. We're going to send you to Diner 62. I just need to get you on here and get your address and have a lot of fun. Thanks for playing.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask.
And 26, and the S&P 500 is down 54. And that's your money now.
It's 8:59. Hey, we're about ready to wrap up here, getting set for Wheels Up Wednesday. Although some people are saying, why don't you rename it something different? Pac-Man writes me this morning, by the way, emailing Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. And Bill, what is this about the curly fry light bulb funny? He says, Bill, I think it's funny. They don't want us to put mercury in the landfills, but they don't think twice about putting fluoride in our drinking water. Yeah. Now, to be fair, though, we don't do that here in Southern Oregon. Yeah, we don't have that issue. Although maybe there's a little bit of naturally occurring fluoride, but your point well taken. And you'll be happy to know that after the recent studies, they're starting to figure out that, yeah, fluoride really has been causing what they believe are some IQ deficiencies in long-term studies that they've been looking at. And so finally, the fluoridating of water supplies appears to be going away and going away big time, all right? Maybe we talk more about that. I so appreciate your writing in the email, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. See you tomorrow.
Place to talk, KMED and KMED.